to a series on Friends of Mine, and now your host, AJ Orsini.
Hey everybody out there, this is your host of Orsini's Uncensored Mind. This is AJ Orsini. Not a whole lot of fanfare for tonight's episode. To be honest, I'm going to set the stage for you right now. I'm not even sitting, I'm standing at my table, I'm in my living room, the usual spot where I do the show from House of O here, of course. I got a, what is this, Lego Batman cup. With a little scotch and soda in here. This is actually my second one because I have to work up the courage to do this. I have to work up the courage because what's going on here is bad place. And it's a familiar tale. I've been in this bad place a few times over the course of the last few weeks, but this is the worst place. I had a friend recently, if you've been following the show, who was who had received some injuries and went to the hospital for a while, about a week or so. Well, actually, over a week. And came out pretty okay thus far. So he's still not home, but things are looking good. Things are looking positive. Obviously, if you listen to the show, I've been stressing over school and work and all kinds of stuff going on. Still trying to make the show good. Still trying to make the show as entertaining as possible, talking about pro wrestling and the like. But this is bad. This is bad for a number of reasons. I'm flying by the seat of my pants on this one. I don't have any notes. I don't have a really big go-to spot to be at right now. By the title of the episode, you already know where this is headed. If you know me personally or are a fan of my work over the past God knows how many years here in the pro wrestling business, you know that I keep things pretty close to the chest, and I don't get too emotional about things, and I won't be too emotional here, or at least I hope I won't. I hope it's all out the door for right now. I know this roller coaster is far from over, but I happen to have a podcast. I happen to have an outlet for the way that I'm feeling, and so this won't be a long episode, I don't think, because I don't intend on coming out here and rambling for forever. But if you're new to any of the recent news that's been going on in the pro wrestling business, I'll go ahead and just start off with the news portion of it. Late, about 2:30 in the morning, I believe. Late Saturday evening, a very good friend of mine who is an independent pro wrestler here in the New York area by the name of Matthew Travis passed away, unfortunately. Due to, I don't even know how to describe it, to be honest with you, because what's the word to use here? Avoidable? Like, do I turn this sadness into anger right now? An unfortunate accident. For those of you who don't live in the New York area, obviously, just a quick rundown of the city. There's obviously, I think you guys know, there's five boroughs: Bronx, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Queens, and Staten Island. And everything is connected through bridges and tunnels and whatnot. It's like some sort of labyrinth of different ways to connect to all the boroughs. And one of the ways that you get from the Bronx to Manhattan is through a bridge called Third Avenue Bridge, Willis Ave Bridge, whatever you call it locally. But it's a bridge that connects people from the Bronx over, is it the East River, I think? I think it's the East River. Into Spanish Harlem, over on the east side, 125th Street's bridge that crosses over, apparently around that time of night. I don't know where Matt was headed. I don't know what Matt was doing. But he happened to be outside riding a bike at about 2:30 in the morning, which is the norm with him. He usually traveled by bike to places. It's New York. Having a car here is a pain in the ass. Also, the way that he would put it is great cardio, getting from place to place. He would ride his bike from the Bronx, which is where he lived, to House of Glory, where he trained. and called his home in a different section from where I'm at, but in Brooklyn, which is a pretty long bike ride. But he would do that constantly. So that's not out of the norm that he was on a bike. And it's also not out of the norm that he was out at 2:30 in the morning, because he's kind of a night owl. So what is out of the norm, however, is he was riding his bike at 2:30 in the morning, heading to wherever he was heading, in a dump truck, which made an illegal turn. They made a turn they were not supposed to make, coming off of the bridge, didn't see him, and hit him pretty dead on. According to the news reports, he sustained massive injuries from the hit. He was taken to a local nearby hospital, but was pronounced dead at the hospital. He was 25 years of age, and he survived by family, as far as, you know, mother and siblings and things. He didn't really have, he wasn't married, didn't have kids, but he is survived by a lot of loved ones. And here we are. That's the short version of it. There are other details, obviously, and you're free to look them up, because it was this accident was carried by most of the local news outlets. Also, some coverage spread through Univision and over into different countries. I don't know where I'm going with this. I know I needed to do an episode. I contemplated strongly about not doing anything at all, but I haven't missed. And if he were here right now, he would tell me to get off my ass and do what I need to do. I met, before I go forward, I was getting ready to tell you the story of how we met, but let me preface everything that I'm about to say right now by saying this, because this is very important. I am not going to sit here and claim to be Matt's best friend. There's a very deep inner circle he was a part of as far as his really close friends. Let me take a swig here, because I got to keep this blood flowing to get through this. Hold on. There's a very tight group that he was a part of. Really close friends. I know of them. I know all of them. I'm friends with them. But to say that we're all in the same circle, it's different. It's hard to explain. But I'm not going to sit here and proclaim myself to be his best friend, nor would he proclaim himself to be my best friend. But we were very, very good friends. Very, very good friends. Spoke on occasion. He'd ask me, like I said, he doesn't have kids of his own, but he would ask me about my kid, and, you know, he would tell all these different stories to me about what's going on over at House of Glory, because for those of you who follow my show, you know that I used to be with House of Glory for a long time. I was with House of Glory from about the end of 2012 to about 2017, something of that nature. No, 2016. My son was about 1 or 2 years old when I finally left the House of Glory for personal reasons. And as I was leaving, he was really starting to catch his niche over at House of Glory, which I'll get to that story. But I'm not going to sit here and claim to be his best friend, because I'm not. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that what I'm about to say is a fucking eulogy or anything like that. That's not my place to do. I'm not his closest friend, but I know that we were close. And he made it clear to me on several occasions that we were very close. And I'll explain to you why. Because it has everything to do with the way that we met. The reason why I feel so attached to Matt and have for all these years, no matter where we see each other, no matter how many times we see each other, we always embrace, we always hug, like it's the family reunion, you know. We always used to grab each other and just, you know, we were very, very close and very fond of each other, and we had much love for each other all the time. Both privately and socially. We met years ago, long before the days of House of Glory. We met at the same place I meet everybody, apparently, because if I think back on all the stories on how I met this person, how I met that person, it's always at the same pace. Daryl's Extreme Fitness, the gym, the infamous Daryl's Extreme Fitness in the Bronx. Training gym for the Bronx Wrestling Federation, same place I ran my 2KW shows and the whatnot. I met him there, and he was fucking nobody from nowhere. You know, he was he was some kid from the Bronx, loved pro wrestling, and the closest wrestling he can get to was in that gym, and he would come and he would watch the shows, and he would get hype. And I remember him telling me that he happened to come to a show one day, and he was asking, you know, a couple of the boys, you know, if they would mind training him or whatever the case may be. And everybody always says the same thing in Darryl's Extreme Fitness. You know, if you want to learn to become a wrestler, you know, you pay your money, you come into the gym. Most times it's an open gym, or sometimes you can get a guy to come in like Bronco, like the guy who runs the place himself, Bronco, or anybody else to come in and help train you. It wasn't a school per se, but it was access. You know, it's a pro wrestling ring. You can come in there, and usually 9 times out of 10, if you happen to be at that gym while there's a few veterans in there, a few experienced or seasoned pros, they probably show you a thing or two and sets, you know, get you started with some basics, some fundamentals, you know, roll drills and ropes, running ropes and bump drills and equilibrium stuff with the running around the ring and the quarter roll, tag roll, all that stuff, all that good training shit that I'm going to be honest with you, I fucking miss. And he started doing that, and that's where I met him. I was one of those idiots that just happened to be at the gym coming in, get some ring rust off, training a little bit. I was actually wrestling at the time in the ring. If I'm not mistaken, for the BWF, I think I was with the Bronx Wrestling Federation at the time. So this was one of those days where I came to the gym and it was empty, which is rare. But I just happened to work out that way. And me personally, I enjoy those times. Just you in the ring with your thoughts, running ropes. I mean, Bronco was even there. Like, Bronco's on the other side of the gym. Because the way Darryl's is set up, it's like it's a ring area. I mean, literally area. Like, it's sectioned off with railings and stuff. It's a whole ring area, ring side and benches and the ring itself. And then on the other side is like a gym where you lift weights and all this other stuff. So I remember, like, people were in the gym, but I was the only one in the ring, and I remember training and doing some rolls, doing the whole deal, running ropes, doing some cardio stuff, and a whole group, like a gaggle of guys that I've never heard of in my entire life or never seen before, all paid their money to come in the ring and do some stuff, and I guess he'd already been doing some training or whatever, and Matt was a part of this group, and I'm going to be honest with you, at that time, I have a hard time remembering a lot of the guys that were with him, but I remember Matt standing out. Now, I'll explain why, because Matt was the smallest in the group of the guys that came that day, and I remember everyone coming in and, you know, doing all the proper shit. Hey, how you doing? Shake hands and shit. And, you know, they're doing the drills too, running some ropes and all kinds of stuff, and I remember a lot of these guys had never really worked before. They'd never done any shows or matches or anything like that. Excuse me. And I don't normally do this on my show, so if you're listening for the first time, I apologize. But I usually do my drinking before and after, but not during. And I remember him. He was just so fucking determined. Like, we used to call him little Napoleon Complex, because no matter, he was the smallest guy, but he wanted to take every bump. He wanted to do everything. And I remember just seeing this kid in here just fucking getting his ass beat. We would do little round robins where you basically just call it in the ring, tag at random. Two guys just start working spots, working holds. And then this motherfucker would never tag out. He just wanted to go and go and go. And it was a good kid. He was I was impressed by him. And we dapped up. And I remember getting ready to go. They were still in the ring. But I remember getting ready to go. And I remember Matt approaching me because he had known me from the shows or whatever. And he's still kind of in the ring, but he's hanging out the bottom rope, and he's talking to me, and I'm getting my gear off and changing up, and I remember saying to myself, I got to get going, because from Darryl's to where I was living at the time, it's like 2 trains to get there, and it's like an hour to get back to the house, and I was kind of in a rush, but he started talking to me, I started talking back, and the next thing I know, I'd been there for an extra hour and a half, because he wouldn't shut up, and he just... And it wasn't like it wasn't shut up in a bad way, like he's talking my ear off, but he's hitting me with all this interesting shit, because normally when I meet guys who are new to the business, like, they're so interested in the moves and the bumps and the wrestling match portion of it, very rarely do you get a guy who's thinking in fucking three-dimensional, right? Like, he's like, okay, but I don't really, I want to work on my skill set and my physical tools and all that stuff, but at the same time, like, I want to gear it towards something, like, let it fit into a gimmick. And I was listening to him, like, well, that's the way you're supposed to do it. And he's like, yeah, let me know if this is a good idea. And he would just start pitching. Like, I've never met a guy that young. And this is, like, he just passed away this past week, and he passed away at 25. I must have met him
Fuck. Easily 5 years ago. Easily. 2000, was that 14? I mean, even before that. Because I was with BWF 2000, I want to say 13. So, yeah. I mean, this could have been 5, maybe even 6 years ago, which would have made him 20 or 19 or some shit. And he was just rattling off all these ideas. And then I would hear him and I would counter back. And I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. What if you, like, did this? And I, like, tweaked it. And he was just like, oh, that shit is dope. And then, and the next thing you know, dude, it's like fucking 90 minutes. And we just hit it off. It was just immediate. We hit it off and we just had conversation. And then I remember leaving, like, finally throwing in the towel. I was like, okay, I have to fucking go. And I was leaving so late that I was seriously contemplating taking a cab. But I was like, you know what? I'll catch some Z's on the train, whatever. I get on the train. And for those of you, again, who are not from New York, in the train subway stations at that time anyway, there weren't too many subway stations with internet in it, like Wi-Fi access or, like, signal on your phone. So, like, only certain stations would do it, like 42nd Street, like your major stations. For the rest of it, it's like dark, it's cell phone darkness. You got no fucking signal. And then as I'm on the train heading home, he's texting me because we had exchanged numbers, and he's texting me, like, the whole train ride. So instead of catching Z's, I had my phone out waiting for the next subway station that had internet to fucking respond back. And we ended up talking even more as I'm heading back to my fucking house. Like, we just... We clicked almost fucking immediately. So it got to a point where he was hitting me up, and he was like, hey, when are you heading to the gym? We'll go together, blah, blah, blah. And we would go together, and we would train, and I'd beat the fuck out of him, and he'd beat the fuck out of me. You know, I give Matt this. He, even when he was training, even when he was a rookie, even at his most respectful, like, he fucking fought back. It was never a phase. I don't ever remember a time where Matt was just this young dummy just getting beat up in the ring and just, well, this is what the veterans do. Like, no, like, he was a real fucking man from day one, even as a young pup, even though you looked at him and you can just see he's a kid, but he never conducted himself as a kid. So I always had respect for him. I always respected him from day one, because he carried himself like a real fucking man from day one, and he just fucking stood out. And over time, as we started training, those guys that he came with, they started fizzling off. And then he started falling more in line with the real athletes and the real guys that were training to be serious. Guys, and I don't mean to name drop, but, like, I've had him on the show before in Montekia. The House of Glory Crown Jewel champion right now, the longest reigning in company history. I've had him on the show here as an interview. We're tight. We're cool. We've been friends for a long time. And we all met during that time period. I mean, Monty knew him first, from what I understand. He knew him before I even met him at the gym. But they got really, really close during this time period because Matt started taking this extremely seriously. And Monty was going to the BWF, and there was a bunch of guys. Josh Glide, Caveman. There was a lot of guys that were kind of like in this circle. And Dario, I don't want to miss him. Tank, I don't want to miss him. There's a lot of fucking names in this group. EA James, Vander James, excuse me. There's a lot of guys that were in this group, and they were all part of, like, this BWF crew. And I remember training with them, and the same stories that Montekia told here about me beating their asses and showing them the ropes and showing them fundamentals and whatever days that I wasn't doing it. Believe it or not, Matt Travis would train with Santana and Ortiz back in their early days when they were at the gym training and all that stuff. And they would just pick our brains, and they would just try to learn the business and pick it up. And eventually they got really, really serious. And I remember them hitting me up. I'll never forget the day. They were all in a room together talking, but Monty hit me up on my, you know, text messages on my phone. And they're all in the room, but he's the one texting me, and he goes, listen, we can't do this BWF thing anymore, because it's not a real school. It's just an open gym. So it was like, we need to be taught. We need to learn real shit so we can be real shit in this industry. And at the time, I was working with House of Glory, and House of Glory is, to me, still one of the best schools I've ever seen for learning in-ring things and learning the business and picking up, you know, different psychology things with your matches. And it just, they're just really old school training, and they're just really, really good. And I remember they had a few schools that they had already went to like try out and try to feel it out. They were trying to figure out the best school for them, and all the schools they went to try
Because they were like, oh, where should we go? And I was like, well, where have you gone? And they started listing all these different places and blah, blah, blah. And I remember them telling me the story. I believe Monty told it on my show. They said, of all the places that we went to, they all let us bump around and do whatever we were doing. Yada, yada. House of Glory was the only school that didn't let us go in the ring. We had to watch. And I said, well, then that's all the evidence you need right there. That's a real school. And I told these guys, I said, if you want to learn how to be good in the ring and safe, and I remember, I'm not going to say the names, but I said, you can go to those schools and you'll learn and you'll develop a skill set. If you want a career, if you want to learn your skill set, hone your craft, and have a career out of this, you need to go to House of Glory. And this is before Club at Missouri. This is before all that stuff. This is back when House of Glory was doing handball court shows and joint shows with FTW and all this stuff. I said, this is where you want to be. And Matt was a part of that group. And they all ended up deciding, okay, we're going to give it a shot. We're going to go. And I remember Matt telling me, and I remember Monty telling me that when they got there, it was a little rough because they were the BWF guys. But I told them over the phone, I said, do everything you did in BWF, do it there. Every time they hit you, get back up. Every time they fucking say shit about you, just shake their hand and smile. Just keep moving forward. Whatever happens, just eat the bullshit and go. And they did. And they ended up becoming some of the most respected men in that entire locker room. And, and Matt was one of them. Matt was one of them. And he was just one of those dudes, man. He was determined. He was a fucking warrior. All the things that you hear about this man, about him being a young king and all that stuff, I said it on my social media, and I mean it. He was only 25, and he was so much better than so many fucking people. He developed so much farther than I could have ever taken him, which was the truth. And I told him, I said, I can teach you this and I can teach you that, but I can't teach you. I can teach you how to wrestle in a match, but I can't teach you to be a pro wrestler. You need to go to an established guy to do that. I'm not established. I know enough to have good matches with people when need to. I could be a mechanic for you, but you need to go and learn. And he did. And he went to House of Glory and he became one of the best fucking pro wrestlers I've had ever had the privilege of knowing in real life. Having him in my life was just an amazing thing. It was just amazing because when you speak to him, when you just speak to him, forget the gimmick and forget the wrestling, okay? If you just talked to Matty, not Matt Travis, not the guy with the staple gun and the money and all that other stuff, just talk to Matty. You will find one of the greatest people on earth. He was just so humble. Real humble. Not this fake shit that we have in the industry. Not this fake shit you see on the social media. Real humble. A person who truly understood. He was fighting from the bottom. And as he ascended to the top, he never forgot what that bottom felt like. Ever. The last time I saw him, and those of you who are new to the show still might know this, but a few months now? I can't remember. I think it was over the summer. I went to a tribute to Homicide, Game Changer Wrestling. They did a tribute show for Homicide. I was invited, and I went. And Matt was working the show. Matt had reunited with Ken Broadway to form MBK, and they were there, did their whole thing. It was cool. And the match was cool, but I wasn't really there for the matches. I'm being honest with you. I was there for the camaraderie. I hadn't been in a locker room in a long time, and I remember I was talking to, I think it was D. I was talking to Homicide about something. I was thanking him and all that stuff, and right from behind, dude, fucking... He's a little dude, but I'm a short dude too, so I guess it doesn't matter. But he did this like bear hug thing from like over the neck. You know, you come from behind and you like drape over a fucking guy's shoulders. Caught me by surprise, man, fucker. And we hugged and it was a whole deal, and Matt looked over at Homicide and was just like, yo, this is a real dude right here, man. He welcomed me into the business with open arms, man. And I did. And I did, and I never thought twice about it. I always felt like he was one of those dudes that belonged here. I really did. And I will never... I wish somebody would have told me that conversation I had that night with him would be the last one I would ever have with him. Because I would have said so much more. And it's funny because we were so congratulatory towards each other. He was congratulating me on the success of my podcast. I was congratulating him on his success and his career. He was riding high, top of the card with House of Glory, cage matches with Broadway, stealing shows, doing the whole CZW deal and getting into the best of the best tournament and just doing all these cool things, man. And I was so happy for him. And I was so proud of him because I saw the struggle. I knew where he came from. I saw the start of it. You know, all the different gimmick ideas that he had in the beginning. And, he ended up choosing the right one. There was a couple of clunkers in there. But he chose the right one. He chose the one that fit. He chose the one that worked. He chose the right people to be around. He was... If you're going to ask me, and I've been asked a few times, just like, what was his best quality? No matter how much success he wanted, because he wanted success. He had a drive to be successful. There's no doubt in my mind that Matt Travis at some point in time would have been on WWE television. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. He's a can't miss. He was a can't miss. You look at Matt and you meet Matt and you talk to him and you see him in the ring and you meet him in person and you say to yourself, he's a fucking star. He just is. He just is. There's just something about him that makes you look at him and say, I'm going to pay money to see this guy do his fucking thing. It just was that way. It's always been that way. As far as I've known him. And I've known him since the beginning of his very career. Before it ever really got off the ground, I knew him. And that night at the Homicide show, I brought my podcast equipment. Because I was there to watch the show, and that's where I did the LAX interview. I did it in the locker room with Ortiz and Santana. The part that I left out when I hyped that show up is that I was supposed to do two interviews that night. I was supposed to do Ortiz and Santana, and I was supposed to do Matt Travis. I was going to do LAX first because they had to leave. And then I was going to do Matt Travis after the fact because there was supposed to be an after party and all these things. And there was an after party. But there was also a situation in the main event. Nick Gage and Low Life Louie had a hardcore match to close out the show for the GCW title. And Louie got badly injured in the head, like split open type deal. And they had the ambulance come. And they had to wheel him out, and so the commissioner shut that shit down fast. So I got the first one done. I got LAX done, and by the time we were done with that interview, they were kind of shutting the show down and shutting the party down, and we had to go. So I didn't get a chance to get Maddie. Thinking about that now, that was a horrible mistake. I should have figured something out. I don't know. I really wish I had gotten it now because that was a story that I would have loved to have told on my show and interviewed him and had that conversation with him for all of you to hear because I think you would have enjoyed it. I think you would have enjoyed meeting this man. And then it gets scarier because that was a while ago. And I remember, I don't know if it was 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, something like that, very recently. I said on the show that I'm hoping to get an interview for the next week. I'll let you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I came back the next week and said, well, we had, mutual scheduling issues, so it didn't happen. Like I said, I have my show all the time. I don't announce names unless they're here, and I know they're here, and then I'll announce them because at least I know. I don't want to say a name and not deliver. Well, that person that we had mutual didn't work out scheduling conflict, that person was Matt. Matt was the person who was supposed to be here a few weeks ago so that we can have an interview, and something had happened with me. I think my wife got sick or something, and I don't know what happened with him, but it was a mutual deal. We were going to reschedule, And the last thing that he said to me was, I'll hit you back up and let you know when I'm free again. And I said, cool. And now I'm really sad to know that I will never get that call now. I'll never get that call. I'll never know. I'll never know when he's free again. Because now he's not here anymore. And I wish, because it'll just make me upset all over again. I wish that I wish that I could turn this sadness into the anger that I really want to. Because it wasn't like he passed, he was taken. And that makes the whole thing fucking worse. The whole thing fucking worse. Last week I had made mention that I was going to film an episode for Comic Conversation, website that from 2bc.com about comic book conversations and stuff. And I did it on Saturday, and I was all set to come onto the show and promote it and let you guys know what the deal was and what we talked about and when it's going to happen. And, you know, and I drove back from New Jersey, and I came into my home, and I went into the kitchen to get something, and I get a bloop on my phone, and it was Josh Glide, I mentioned earlier, another indie wrestler that I'm very close with, who I haven't spoken to in a while. So he sent me a message, and he said, is all this true? And I said, what? He said, the stuff about Maddie, is it true? And I said, what are you talking about? I didn't know what he was talking about. I actually thought he was talking about Maddie Ming at first. Because I never called Travis Maddie. I just called him Matt. Ming, I call Maddie. It's just a difference in, I don't know, names. So I thought he was talking about Maddie Ming. So I started going on Maddie Ming's Facebook, and I'm like, what the fuck happened to Maddie? And I'm looking through, and he hits me back with, he hits me back up with Maddie's dead. And I was confused. And I said, what do you mean Maddie's dead? What are you talking about? And as soon as I got, like, I moved his messenger mess bubble out of the way. And I went back to the Facebook. Because I was on Maddie's page, not my timeline. And when I went back to the timeline, there it was. All over the place. And it hit me like a lightning bolt. It really did. I dropped my phone. Luckily, I was over the counter, but I dropped my phone. And I yelled out. I said, "Are you?" Those were the words that came out of my eyes. Are you fucking kidding me? And I dropped my phone, and I grabbed my face, and I said, "Are you fucking kidding me?" And almost instantly, I just started crying. And my wife and my son are in the other room. I have a walk-through kitchen, so it's open on both sides. So my living room is on the opposite side of that. So my wife and my son are on the couch watching TV, and all I hear is a plop because I dropped my phone. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? So at first, my wife goes, what's wrong? I guess she thought I dropped something or something. But then they heard the cry, and both of them, my son and my wife, got up. And they were very concerned. But my wife and my son were both saying, what's wrong? What's happening? What's wrong? What's happening? And I couldn't say the words out loud. And I couldn't say Maddie's dead. All I could do was point to a picture. Because my timeline still happened to be up. And I pointed to the picture. And I said, and that's when I said it. I said, Matt died. Maddie's dead. And my wife was a little confused because, unfortunately, my wife had never met him. She knew the name. She knew that we had conversations. She saw pictures. But she never physically met him. And my son has definitely never met him. So, at this point, the cutest thing in the world happened. I'm bawling my eyes out. Because in my 36 years on this earth, the amount of people in my life that I've lost is tremendous. Both from natural causes to diseases to shit like this where it was accidents and it should have been avoided across the board. But it's been a while since I have known that kind of pain. And losing Matt so suddenly, so abruptly, just being like that, he's gone. And I guess the amount of stress I've been under the past 2 weeks and everything just piling up on me, it all, like all of it just came out. And I just started crying. And my wife grabbed me, hugged me, and my son grabbed me and hugged me, which was so cute because he doesn't know who Matt is, but he knows that his dad is sad. And I don't think my son has literally ever seen me cry before. And I think it's the first time that my son felt like something was very seriously wrong. Because I don't think he's ever seen his dad cry before. So my wife says, it's going to be okay. And my son says, don't worry, Dad. You still have me. Which, of course, made me cry harder. Because it's the cutest thing ever. And I just remember my wife hugging me, and I remember picking up my son, and it was the first thing I can think of. I just grabbed my son. I just grabbed him, and I just hugged him. And I just... It's going to sound cliche, and it's going to sound like a movie, but I was so sad over losing Matt that when I hugged my son, I hugged him like he was Matt. I don't know. It sounds corny. I know. It sounds horrible. When you on the surface, I know it just sounds ridiculous, but I felt it. Like there was a piece of me that was just like Matt was there. And I didn't strangle him, but I gave him a nice tight, just, I don't know if it was a goodbye hug. I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking. My son was there. He just said the cutest line of all time, and I just hugged him. And I must have cried on and off. This happened Saturday night. I must have cried on and off all the way until Monday morning. We had scheduled a party, a get-together for my wife's grandmother. I'm going to be honest, I was spaced out for most of it. On two occasions, I had to step out so I can get more tears out. I wasn't focused on it. I wasn't into it. I wasn't here. Sunday is a blur to me. It really is. I know it did shit. And I know I tried to be there for my family. I did. I really did. I tried. But everything just kept popping up sad. And I wasn't alone. Both in my home or, like, either figuratively or literally, I was not alone. And I didn't realize how non-alone I was until about midway through Sunday when the world had opened up about Matt. And everyone from all walks of life were stunned by the news, were hurt by the news, saddened by it. People tweeting and posting on his page and all walks of life. Wrestling fans from all across the world. Wrestlers from all across the world from different promotions. Kevin Owens going out of his way to send out his heartfelt condolences to the family. People from Mexico and Puerto Rico and from the UK and from Japan and all across the country here in the States, and not even wrestling fans, but people who are friends with wrestling fans or friends of wrestlers who may have seen him offshot or just heard of him, just sending out their condolences and their love and sending out their prayers to the family and everything. To be 25 years old and to have that much love and respect from beyond your peers, but from the world, speaks to the magnitude of the kind of human being Matt Travis was. Not the wrestler, not the gimmick, the person. And it's a fucked up thing to say. It really is, and I own up to it, and I apologize for this, but the truth of the matter is, I can give you 10 names off the top of my head who are in this industry that if they died tomorrow, if I was scrolling through my Facebook and I saw this person's name passed away, I'd chuckle and keep fucking scrolling. There's so many people in this industry that's so fake, it's so bullshit. And, you know, life took one of the good ones. And it's just so fucking unfortunate. And it's so fucking unfair. There was so much more that he had to do. There was so much more that he was left on this earth to give us. The entertainment, storytelling, the passion, the love, the humbleness, everything about him that who made him who he was. There was so much more of that to give. And as much drive and as much success as he wanted as an individual, he was the kind of person that would bend over backwards to make sure that the people who were next to him was eaten too. He didn't just want to be successful on his own. He wanted everybody next to him to have that same passion and that same drive to succeed as well. Even if it meant spending extra hours in the gym, he did it. Even if it meant sitting down with you and talking with you and getting you through shit, he did it. Matt Travis was truly a leader. He wasn't just another guy from the fucking block. He wasn't just another young punk trying to make it in the pro wrestling business. He was a fucking leader. And I have no doubt in my mind at all whatsoever that if he would have pushed forward, if he would have gotten his years in, he would have been one of the kings of this city. His name would have been up there, right there with the greats who have come out of this area. Dare I say, and maybe it's probably too far to say, and I'm filled with emotion, but he probably would have gone down as one of the best, if not the best, because he was doing it at an early age, and he would have had the longevity. We did the Homicide show. It was 25 years in the business. He would have hit Homicide numbers. I could see him winning championships across the globe. He would have been an amazing contribution to the business. Because to be honest with you, this business needs more people like him in it. So when you tell me that he's the one that had to go, I call bullshit on this whole thing, man. What's it really all about? It's a joke. A man like that, taken long before his prime, wasn't even hitting his stride yet. All this shit that you see on YouTube right now, the music video people are sharing, you know, the matches that people are releasing and sharing about him, that was the tip of the iceberg. That was him just getting his feet wet. He didn't even dive into this shit all the way yet. You haven't seen Matt Travis's final form yet. And now we'll never see it. Because a dump truck coming off of a bridge had to make that fucking left. You know, I was sad on Saturday. I was grieving on Sunday. I was kind of in a mood on Monday. But on Tuesday, yesterday, I was full-fledged angry. And that's why I'm doing this episode now. It's Wednesday. I don't normally do it this this early. But I had to get it out the way because Saturday, as a matter of fact, let me pull that info up now that I'm talking to you. Because Saturday, I'm breaking a streak here. I haven't been to a House of Glory wrestling show since my last one that I called, which was 2-3 years ago. I haven't been there in a long time. And it's not because of any ill will. There's not because of any problems or anything like that. I haven't gone because it's too much for me to be there. I had so much fun being there. I had so much fun with those guys. And to be there and not working would have driven me insane. But this Saturday, November 16th, is not about working. It's not about doing a show. It's not about trying to perform. I'm going to be there in solidarity of my brothers and sisters who are still there. And for the main brother who we lost this week, and Matt Travis. House of Glory is running their show No Limit this Saturday, November 16th, the NYC Arena, Club by Missouri. 91-12, 144th place, Jamaica, New York, 11435 is the zip. You can get tickets by going to hogwrestling.net, or you can hit them up on the Facebook event page, and they have ticket information there at tickettailor.com. You can get tickets there. It's already going to be a great show. House of Glory has already made some announcements. Rock and Roll Express going to be in the house. The NWA Tag Team Champions. Kurt Angle is going to be in the house. TJ Perkins, if I'm not mistaken, goes against Monty for the Crown Jewel Championship. The six-way championship will be on the line so far. Obviously, Charles Mason, the champion, will defend against Desmond Xavier, Facade, and they haven't named the other three yet. Low-Key versus Leroy Green. This is going to be a dope match. There's a lot of stuff going on. Meet and greets at 4. Main card, bell times at 7. Tickets start at $20. All you got to do is go to hogwrestling.net. You are in the door. And that's all great stuff. And I'm sure they're going to put on a hell of a show, because I know these guys better than most. And I know these guys can put on a show like nobody's business. And I think they're going to be a little extra motivated. It's going to be a little extra stank on this one. Because they've already promoted it as well. It's a tribute to Matt. I'm sure they're going to go all out. And I will be there. And yes, I will be in a suit, as is my usual tradition now. When I go to these shows, I wear suits. But this one's going to be a little different. I'm going to wear the suit as usual. But I will be wearing the traditional wrestler's tape around the wrist as a dedication. Well, I will have a dedication on it to Matt Travis and the loss of our brother. Like I said, flying by the seat of my pants on this one. I just wanted to tell my story with Matt, and I think I've done that here tonight. I think I'm all done. I don't think I want to do much more of this, because emotional roller coaster this week. I'm good now. I almost broke on a couple of occasions here telling the story, but I'm good. But this Saturday, I'm not even releasing this on Saturday. I'm going to be releasing this on Friday, because I don't want any confusion. I'm going to be doing a lot of House of Glory promoting on Saturday, because I really want people to come to this show. I want people to be turned away at the door, but not leaving. Like, right outside the door, still celebrating Matt Travis. So I hope everyone comes out to support. If not, I understand completely. We all can't get to where we need to be, you know what I'm saying? We all got things we got to do. If not, I hope to see as many of you there as possible. I'm not there to work. This is the same deal as before. I'm not there to work. I'm not advocating for a job. I'm not trying to sneak onto the commentary table. None of that shit. I'm going over there for fun, to be around the boys, to be around the guys again and the gals, and to really be there for our boy, for Matt Travis, who was taken from us far too soon. So if it made it this deep into the podcast, thank you for listening. But I'm going to end this episode, nothing catchy. I'm going to play the traditional 10 bell salute, which I have done on this show before for Fallen Brothers. But to be honest, I've done them for older performers that I respect very much, but never really knew. On this show, I've given guys like San Martino and Harley Race and Vader the 10 bell salute. I gave the 10 bell salute to a good friend of mine, Will Turner, who had passed away. And that one sucked. To hear a friend and a fan pass away, it sucked. But with all due respect to William, this will be my hardest 10 bell salute. This will be the one that will, I don't say break me, but it's going to mess with me for sure. No catchy nothing. This is not the episode for that. So I'm just going to play it out, and then that'll be the end of the episode. So thank you guys for sticking around. Hopefully, you know, next week be a little bit more chipper. You know, a lot of news in the wrestling world came out this week, but to be honest with you, I didn't care. This was bigger to me than anything in pro wrestling, and you guys know how much I love pro wrestling, but this meant more. So, thank you guys, and I'll catch you guys next week.